You're listening to an SBS News podcast.
I thought I'd seen it all earlier this week when a colleague tried to make dumplings on a toaster maker, but a steak really like leveled it up.
Hi, I'm Rania Yallop.
And I'm Eva Soszewska.
And welcome to Party Time. Now, this week's a bit different. Elfie's away, but we have the fabulous Eva here, a political correspondent with SBS all the way from Canberra. Thank you so much for being here, Eva.
Thank you. My absolute pleasure.
So we're in the last sitting week of the year. What's it been like?
It's been a bit frantic, a little bit exhausting. The final few weeks of the year referred to as killing season, which is where, you know, potentially a leadership spill might happen. So the start of the week was a little bit eerie in the building. We were all kind of waiting to see what's going to happen with Liberal leader Susan Lee and whether her party might axe her.
Yeah, it seems like she's going to make it through the year, though.
It does seem like it. The party's finally settled on their abandoning of net zero, the coalition. So it looks like Lee's now being given a chance to kind of sell the vision, with much of question time this week being around energy prices and really grilling the Albanese government around their energy policy.
Yeah, and there was a comically timed power outage too.
Yeah, the opposition really got into this one. The lights went out and within seconds they all had their phones up like at a concert, lights up, swaying, laughing, obviously playing into that whole, you know, energy kind of vibe.
Yeah. How do you keep the lights on?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. it's a shame for them. They're like so far out from an election because like it would be a good moment for a like election campaign ad.
Yeah, totally.
Now, on top of that, there's like events too, right? Like late nights every night.
Yeah, the silly season starts a little bit early in Canberra. So every night there's a different political Christmas party. It was actually a lot more relaxed than last year. I think ahead of the election last year, the speeches were a little bit more tense. This year, everyone was a little bit more relaxed. I was personally a little bit disappointed because my favourite one got axed, which was the Nationals. Yeah. They have a seafood barbecue. There is rumours that it was due to them not being able to afford a barbecue, but
that seems it's not that bad in the coalition, is it?
But I'm not sure about that.
Now, it all seems to be happening in the Senate this week too. Labor's environmental laws have been hinging on a deal in there, and Pauline Hanson has been trying to make a bit of a statement too.
Yeah, so the deal for the environment laws was struck on Thursday morning with the Greens accepting concessions that Labor offered them earlier in the week. It was addressing some of their concerns around the expansion of coal and gas as well as native forest logging. Larissa Waters had this to say.
The Greens are determined to get shit done.
And on Pauline Hanson, she repeated like an old stunt wearing a burqa in Parliament.
Yeah, apparently the year is 2017. She was trying to table a motion to actually ban the burqa in Australia, but the motion was not granted. But that didn't stop Pauline Hanson. She returned wearing a burqa with her legs kind of visible, and the senators were quite outraged. You know, they were calling her racist and divisive. She then refused to leave the Senate. She refused to remove the burqa. And so she was censured and suspended for 7 sitting days.
Yeah. Is that big, 7 sitting days?
Yeah, it is, because it's actually the first time that it's happened since 1979. I think it's only the 5th time it's ever happened. And it means she'll actually miss the first 4 sitting days of 2026.
Yeah. So SBS News spoke to Multiculturalism Minister Anne Ali, who condemned the move that disrespects a small cohort of women who choose to wear the burqa in Australia, arguing that in 2025, women have a choice to wear what they want to wear.
Whether that's a bikini or a burqa. Right? That should not even be a question in this day and age. Women should be allowed to wear what they want to wear.
And this is one of a few ways that Pauline Hanson has been trying to get a bit more media, right?
Yeah, another way is apparently her cooking skills. she chose an interesting instrument to cook a steak this week. It was a bit of a strange dinner party for two with Barnaby Joyce.
Yeah, so she picked a toasty maker, like a like sandwich press to do it, which to be fair, like you're in parliament, you don't have like a full cooking setup. Clearly it's really hard to get a barbecue, so that's out of the question.
Yeah, I mean, I thought I'd seen it all earlier this week when a colleague tried to make dumplings on a toaster maker, but a steak really like leveled it up. I don't know, would you eat a steak off a toaster maker, sandwich maker?
Look, I respect the abilities of a toaster maker. I think that they are one of the most utilitarian kind of pieces of kitchen equipment because they kind of operate as a hot plate. That said, I saw the video of those steaks and they looked a bit dubious and they were thick. Like, you're asking a lot for this like toaster maker to get through the whole thing as well. I don't know.
Yeah. That's a no for me, but it does point to this like will they, won't they kind of thing that's been going on.
So was this like a soft launch of that relationship, do you think? Like a little dinner for two?
They are getting a little bit more.
A little bit cosy?
Yeah, a little more comfortable.
Just jumping in for a quick note, Barnaby Joyce, a couple of hours after recording, announced that he formally resigned from the Nationals, ending his 20 years with the party. TBC, what happens next? Although things did indeed feel very cosy with One Nation earlier this week. Now, another thing happening in the Senate this week is some more information about the deal between the Nauruan and Australian governments to take the so-called NZYQ cohort came out.
Yeah, so that's the group of non-citizens released from immigration detention after a 2023 High Court ruling found that it was unconstitutional for Australia to indefinitely detain individuals who cannot be removed from Australia.
Yeah, so that cohort, which is around 200 to 300 people, is made up of people who can't be deported, many of which have been found to have well-founded fears of persecution in their home countries, and many of which have criminal records too.
It is important to note, though, that not all of them have criminal records. There are people in that cohort that haven't committed any crimes, but since Australia can't deport people in the cohort, the government solution has been to relocate them to a third country, and that third country is Nauru.
So a bit of background on Nauru before we get into the details. This is a Pacific island nation of around 12,000 people. It was once one of the richest countries in the world, but its GDP per capita has more than halved since the 90s, with 80% of the land now unusable and uninhabitable due to phosphorus mining. It had these big phosphorus deposits. They were mined, and now most of this island's pretty small island is basically barren.
Yeah, and Australia has paid Nauru billions to run an offshore detention centre since 2001, and it isn't exactly a friendly nation to journalists. It's basically impossible to go there. Their domestic journalists are all employed by the government itself. So it's incredibly challenging to get kind of any information about what's happening there on the ground.
Yeah, so there was some legislation passed around this time last year that made this deal with the Nauruan government possible. And it kind of absolved the Australian government of any responsibility of what happens to these people once they're in Nauru.
But overall, about this deal itself, we don't actually know much about it, which is where this speech in Senate comes into play, with an interview that the Nauruan president, David Adiang, gave in February this year.
Yeah, now this interview is on Facebook. It's public, but it's in Nauruan, which is a language only spoken by a few thousand people across the world. The government does have an informal translation of it, but they refuse to release that translation with concerns it could reasonably be expected to prejudice Australia's international relations, including Australia's standing in the region.
There's a suppression order on that translation too. So it's basically against the law to report what the translation says. But this week in the Senate, Senators David Shoebridge and David Pocock read an independently translated version of Adiang's February interview explaining the deal to the people of Nauru inside the Senate chamber. The translated version was provided by the Asylum Seeker Resource Centre.
Yeah, we've cut down a fair bit of this and the two senators kind of tag-teamed on reading out the full translation of the interview, but this is part of what David Pocock read out.
When they are given the visa, it is clear to all of us that we have given them a place here. If we say 30 years, then 30 years is what are given. Unless, of course, we, your government, find a way to move them around, for example, they get to go home.
Now, once again, this is not the official Commonwealth translation, and that was read out in the Senate chamber. So they're covered by parliamentary privilege.
Yeah, basically on the floor of Parliament, you have like special legal protection. And so I quote, that the freedom of speech and debates or proceedings in Parliament ought not to be impeached or questioned in any court or place outside of Parliament. Basically giving politicians and people in Parliament a bit more protection to kind of have freedom of speech on the floor of Parliament.
So we can't, or the senators can't, repeat what was said in Parliament, but they're allowed to say it in there because they have a level of legal protection. What has people concerned based on what was read out of the translated interview is the future of these people, of this cohort that's now going to go over there. Under the Refugee Convention, Australia can't send refugees back to their home country if they face violence or persecution there. The principle is known as non-refoulement.
Yeah, but the comments seem to suggest that these non-refoulement principles may not be upheld in Nauru. So joining us to talk through all of this is Green Senator David Shoebridge. Welcome, David.
Yeah, well, great to be here, Anya.
Senator, what do we know about this Nauru deal?
Well, I mean, the bulk of what we know about the Nauru deal has come from Nauru, rather than our own government. The core documents that establish it, the MOU, the Memorandum of Understanding, if there is a trust deed attached to that, the trust deed attached to the Memorandum of Understanding, they've both been hidden by the Albanese government. They refused to produce them. But in questioning through Senate committees, we've discovered that it looks like it's a 30-year deal that may end up costing the Australian taxpayers as much as $2.5 billion, with a kind of sign-on bonus for Nauru that's in the order of about $70 million, and then depending on how many people Nauru takes, $20, $30, $40 million a year on top of that.
Some more information about this deal, and I guess Nauru's position on it, came out through you in the Senate this week. Why are you so concerned about this?
At the core of the whole offshore detention with Nauru is systemic, deliberate, intentional cruelty to people. I mean, that's been the history of offshore detention, you know, first established in Nauru by John Howard in about 2001. There was a moment when I think Labor Prime Minister Rudd stopped it in 2008, but then put it back in again in 2013. And in fact, Labor expanded it to both Nauru and PNG. And, you know, appalling cruelty was evidence with offshore detention in both Nauru and PNG. It was the PNG Supreme Court that finally stopped it, the cruelty on Manus Island in PNG. But Australia has persisted with Nauru. And, you know, what do we know? Well, medicine, MSF, for example, had been in Nauru assessing the impact in, I think, 2018 was when I saw a report detailing the people held in Nauru who had no pathway out, indefinite detention on a small, quite barren Pacific island with minimal community services, minimal employment opportunities. It wasn't a country they had any connections to. MSF, in their report in 2018, found extraordinary distress amongst the people on Nauru. We know that people have suicided, self-harm. There was this thing that they'd identified in Nauru called resignation syndrome, where infant children, young people, just gave up on life and leading to suicide, to incredible health conditions. So the whole system is designed to be cruel. And I suppose as a Green senator, that's our core problem with it. It's cruelty is embedded in it.
I assume you're referring to the roughly like 50 people that we know are still there from the previous kind of deals. We last month heard that the part of this new cohort has started to arrive under the current new deal. What do we know about their treatment and their conditions?
There are three or four people who have now been deported using that legislation to Nauru and using the secret deal that the government struck earlier this year with Nauru. And you ask me, what do we know about their conditions? Well, we don't have any clear evidence about what their conditions. The concern is that they're being held in, effectively being locked into some of the old detention camps on Nauru. But the Nauruan government's not telling us. The Labor government here is refusing to tell us. They're likely sort of effectively imprisoned in detention camps on Nauru, although the government says it's, you know, they're free to go through the community.
So as you say, the government says these aren't, you know, people in detention centres. As far as we know, this deal is for people to live in the community on a visa for 30 years. How can you be confident that they're in detention facilities?
These are the reports we're getting from on the ground in Nauru, and I can't be confident they're in detention facilities. I'm not pretending that I know absolutely where they are in Nauru. The reports we're getting are that they're being held in these old detention facilities, but there is actually I don't have a guarantee that they are in the detention facilities or they are in the community, but they're the reports we're getting from the ground. And, you know, the people who do know where these people are is the Albanese government, and they refuse to tell, and the Nauruan government, and they refuse to tell. And in fact, you know, one of the reasons that this whole issue has sort of come to the fore in this week is because, you know, we finally got onto the public record in Australia some of what the Nauruan president has been saying about this deal for months. And, you know, they're truths that the Albanese government has been trying to hide.
This cohort, many of them have criminal records. There are significant concerns for them being released in the community in Australia, part of the reason that they were detained for a period of time. Some of these people have committed quite serious violent crimes in the past, murder, you know, serious sexual assaults. Surely the government is justified in trying to find a way to, like, remove these people from Australia and remove them from the community to kind of protect the community here in Australia.
Well, I mean, we're meant to operate in accordance with law in Australia, and we have a very well established, you know, century old system for dealing with crimes. It's the criminal justice system. These people have worked their way through the criminal justice system. As you point out, some of them have been convicted of serious crimes and they've finished their sentence. Now, our community has systems for reintegrating people like that into our society. It happens, you know, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of times a day, every day, all across the entire country. And we believe that the criminal justice system should apply equally to everybody, and that process should apply to these people. But the idea that the only way of keeping the community safe is like intentionally indefinite cruel detention for people is just plainly wrong. And of course, if people have been found to have a well-founded fear of persecution from the country they've fled, Russia, Afghanistan, you know, Iran, and you can imagine why people have a well-founded fear of persecution, then Australia has an obligation to provide some protection for them from that persecution. And at the moment, what the Australian government is saying is, well, we think that, you know, these people should be dealt differently from anybody else in the criminal justice system. There's been this fear campaign that's been running between the Coalition and Labor about this relatively small cohort of people. And that's why they've come up with this cruel deal with Nauru. Now, there is also an international obligation under the Refugee Convention that if Australia sends people who have been found to be refugees, genuine asylum seekers, to a third country, we have to ensure that that country won't send them back to the country which they fled, where they have a fear of persecution. It's called refoulement. We've been wanting to see the MOU with Nauru to make sure that that is embedded into the MOU. They refuse to show it to us. And indeed, we heard only recently, you know, from this translation that we finally got of a statement the Nauruan president made months ago. The government's had a translation at all times and refused to produce it. But the Asylum Seeker Resource Centre finally got a translation of this statement from Nauruan by the Nauruan president, Adiang. And it made it clear that he wants to send people that we deport to Nauru back to the country from which they fled in the first place, where there's a well-founded fear of persecution. So we have an obligation not to do that, not to send people back to potential death or torture in countries like Afghanistan, Iran, Sudan, and Russia. And I can't believe our government is entertaining that.
What precedent do you think this sets?
Well, Australia has been setting dangerous precedents on how to deal with refugees and people seeking asylum for decades now. We are literally exporting this cruelty around the world. What Donald Trump is doing is largely been inspired by Australia. You know, those ICE raids, criminal detention, mass deportations. Donald Trump got that idea not from, you know, some far right regime in Central Asia. He got that idea from Australia, from the Australian Labor Party. What's happening in the UK at the moment about stripping away the rights of people seeking asylum, potentially housing people on prison barges in the Thames? Where did that come from? Well, that came from Australia. We are exporting this cruel policies to the rest of the world. And this Nauru deal is like the cutting edge of global bastardry, if I could describe it that way, in dealing with people seeking asylum. And so, you know, this latest deal is a dangerous precedent, but it builds on a whole series of dangerous precedents that Australia has been giving the world.
Given all of that and everything you've explained to us today, Senator, what is the pathway forward? What would you like to see happen? What is Australia's obligation at this point?
Well, the pathway forward is pretty simple. Where we have an obligation under international law to protect people who have come here seeking asylum, we should live up to that obligation ourselves. We shouldn't try and contract it out to a much, much smaller, far more vulnerable Pacific nation to try and deal with problems that we identify. We are a much bigger country. We have well-established systems for integrating people back into the community once they've finished their time under a criminal sentence. And we should apply those structures and we should apply our resources for the cohort for NZYQ. Now, of course, if at some point they choose to resettle in a third country, well, then by all means, we should find ways of promoting that. If people commit a crime, well, then they should be dealt with under our criminal justice system, under our standard community safety issues. But assuming that what the Albanese government says is right, you know, and what Tony Abbott used to say and what the current coalition says and what One Nation says, assuming there's this terrible risk from this cohort of people in Australia, and I reject that, I'll be honest. I think there is a risk, like with all people, but we can deal with it. Assume that is right. How on earth is it ethical, fair, or reasonable to then send them to a tiny country like Nauru with none of the capacity, none of the resources, none of the space to deal with it like Australia? Assuming their argument is right, well, that makes the deal even more obscene.
Thank you so much for speaking with us today, David. Really appreciate it.
That's my pleasure.
So that's it for the last sitting week of Parliament this year, although we do have estimates, special estimates next week. What are you expecting from that?
Yeah, it's the gift that just keeps on giving. yeah, we are definitely expecting, you never quite know what's going to come up in Senate estimates, but I imagine given everything we've learned about Nauru this week, the Greens will continue to kind of question some of those details.
We also had another Optus outage this week. I know that showed up a fair bit in the last estimates. Do you think that'll come up again?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of pressure on the communications minister and Optus at the moment to answer questions. I think the latest outage affected 14,000 people. So it's just something that needs a resolution, especially heading into the summer, into potentially, you know, bushfire seasons, all of that. I think Australians really want reassurance that they're going to be able to, you know, contact one another and services and loved ones.
Yeah, 000. Well, that's all we have for this week. Thank you so much for listening. We will be back next Friday, but before then, please subscribe, give us a thumbs up, 5 stars, and we will see you then.
See ya.
Bye.